Hello, I hope you guys had a good Pesach and recovered from Pesach, and now you're ready to go on to the next thing, the next real landmark, which is Shavuos. So what we're going to be talking about today is getting ready for Shavuos. Now you could think, you know, the Omer, that's getting ready for Shavuos, but there's more to it than that. So, in order to understand what else there is, we have to talk about the Omer, and we have to go back and talk about Pesach itself. But what we're going to be focused upon is the way Hashem actually got us ready, and to hear Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and why we have to remember this moment. So, I was talking today to a young woman whose parents divorced when she was young. She and her siblings lived with their father, who just died. Terrible financial stuff. Terrible emotional stuff. So as she was telling me the litany of all of the terrible things that she's been going through in the last years, it hit me, you know, Hashem stripped her down to the point where all she has is her personality. All she has is who she is as a person. She was divorced, various other things that happened in the way. So why would Hashem do that to anyone? Leave them with nothing except who they are. So you can look at it through two different lenses. One is to say to remove everything that's extraneous, because it's the extraneous realities that keep us from knowing ourselves or knowing Him or even knowing each other. So one angle would be to take away everything that's superficial, everything that's transient, everything that's other. But there's a deeper look. It's to make room for the inner person to come forth. So it's not to get rid of something, but it's to make room for something, which is a completely different way of approach. Most of the time, our identities come forth through our relationship with the world and with others. Who am I? I'm this one's wife, I'm that one's mother, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, whatever it is. But where's the self? So the answer to that question is it's there, but it comes through the world, and oftentimes through adversity. Thus we find, when Hashem told Avraham to move beyond where he is, he said, Lech Lecha. Rashi says, amongst other things, he brings three pshatim, that one of the meanings of lecha to you is lahodia tivacha ba'olam, in order that your true nature be known in the world. That the moving from here to there, getting rid of every vestige of one's identity, is to make who you really are accessible, not only to you, but to the world. So from that perspective, all of the suffering in Mitzrayim was to let the Jews be known. Their beauty, their innerness, their connection. Okay, this takes us now to the Omer. So Hashem revealed enough of Himself to force out the goodness within us, and then retracted. So we rediscovered who He is by discovering the godliness in ourselves during the period of Sphira. But there's more. There's another step. The other step is what took place immediately before Matan Torah, which time Hashem brought them to the mountain. There were miracles. They saw thunder. They heard lightning. All sorts of events that made them recognize that their picture of reality was a very limited one. What was that about? So in order to understand what that was about, let's step back a little bit and talk about reality. So first, a preface. Envision Chachma, the wisdom that Hashem used to create all reality, as being manifest by sparks of reality all over the place. Sparks of truth. This is what the Rav means when he says Chachma is what you learn from other, meaning there's otherness that Hashem created. And that's our... That's the beginning of our search. Bina connects all of these different isolated sparks until they form a whole. So in that sense, Bina is being mevin davar mitoch davar, understanding one thing from another thing. Bina flows through imagery and fantasy. So what that means is connecting this to that requires having an image of what they'll be when they're together. So I'm going to give you an example of what I mean by this. I'll give you a couple of examples because this is it's not an easy concept. Let's talk about choosing a seminary. You're 17, next year you're going to be finishing school. You want to think about where you want to go for your year in Israel. Here's where imagery comes in. You know about this place, that place, the other place, this aspect of your personality, that aspect of your personality. But you have, consciously or subconsciously, an image of what you would like your year to be like and who you would like to be in that year. And you'll choose a seminary to fit that image. Okay, another example. You're getting on the bus. All you have is a 200 shekel note. According to the law, the driver doesn't have to change the money. He could say, change it yourself. I want you to be the driver, not the passenger, the driver. Your name is Yigal, you're 28, you're Moroccan, you're married, you have two little kids, you're only a driver for Egget, you're not one of the co-op members, but you basically like it. You like being behind the wheel, you like being in charge, you like taking home a nice salary, and you like the camaraderie of the other drivers at the end of the day. So with that in mind, how are you going to respond to this middle-aged firm woman giving him a 200 shekel note? So notice the two possibilities. It'll depend all on what his idealized image is. Possibility one. Here she is, dumping on me. She must think she's superior. She must think that I'm nothing. Well, I'm going to show her. I don't have to do anything that I don't have to do. Okay, so if that's his image, the defender of my honor is me. He sees himself almost like a wrestler in a corner, fighting for his rights. He'll say, look, lady, I don't have to change your 200 shekels, change it yourself. You know? Go down, change it. Okay, so this is what he's saying. But what's moving that is his picture of himself defending his own honor. Okay, here's another possible picture. I'm in charge. I'm like the king of the bus. My subject needs help. I'll help her. I'm a very magnanimous king. I'll help her. Yes, lady, my pleasure. Please give me the 200. Okay, sit right here, okay? So his image is completely different, and that's why his response will be completely different. And there are many, many more possibilities. Last example. The last example is something that I thought about today when I read an article in Bina about different things that are done in different communities to promote modesty. So somebody organized SEM girls when they come back to make a petition and to present it in the clothing stores. Dear Mr. Whatever, I want you to know what we want to buy. We want to buy shells that are opaque and not clingy. We want skirts that cover your knees when you sit down and when you walk. Okay? I don't think there was much more on their wish list. Now, if you could back that up with 180 signatures, what's going to happen next? The manufacturer is going to make things that fit these requirements in the course of time. But I want you to be the girl who thought of this. I don't know her. She could have been coming from, you know what? I'm tired of feeling like the victim when I come into the store. They're not doing me a favor by selling me their stuff. Okay? And that self-confidence, that image of herself as a competent person, as a deserving person, would have fueled the energy that she needed to have in order to get this going. Conversely, it might have been from a feeling of despair or anger, which is less likely from the tone of the letter. So all I'm saying by all of this is that there are three things that we have to now understand. There's chachma, these sparks of reality, bina, our ability to form ideas out of what we say, and the imagery that bina needs in order to do this. So Hashem was providing us sparks of reality. What were these miraculous events telling us? They were telling us one thing. God's life force is the interior of all nature. That means thunder could just as easily be visual, if that's how Hashem wants our senses to work, and that's how Hashem wants thunder to work. Lightning could just as easily be something that we hear, if that's how Hashem would want our hearing to work, and if that's how He would want lightning to work. Hashem is the interior reality of all things. So this is the idea of what it means when it says, Yirah Aretz V'Shakata, that the land feared and was quiet. Now if it feared, why was it quiet? Why wasn't there outcry? Because there's recognition that Hashem is also my life force and also cares about me and sustains me. So He's not just a powerful force outside me, He's the one who maintains my existence moment by moment and must love me. So let's understand this love a little better. The love that the Jews felt even before they heard the words, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. For us humans, we could love each other if there's no impediment, very easily. You have someone in your life who's pleasant, who's caring. It's not hard to awaken some love for them. But when there's an impediment, what we tend to do is either be stopped by the impediment, or we sort of chip away at the impediment until it's no longer so big in our minds, and then we can go back to seeing the person. What does Hashem do that's different? As Sfasemba says, Medaleg el ha'arim, he could see the impediment, leap over it, and go right to the interior of the person. So it means he's not denying the impediment, and he's not avoiding the impediment. He's making a purposeful decision not to relate to the impediment because of his love of the person in question. Okay, so what does this have to do with what we're saying? So when Hashem skipped over the mountains, did every possible miracle, made our senses totally unreliable, He was saying, I'm here and I'm here for you. I'm here, I'm in the interior of every natural event, and it's for you. It's because I want you to stretch out to be able to know me. I want you to realize I've been there all along. So when you see that, when you see how it's Hashem's life force that fills everything, everything in nature, the word nature means something different. The word nature no longer means something that's just out there, giving the illusion of separateness from Hashem. You now see nature for what it is. It's a mirror that shows us something of Hashem's presence. And all of the rules could change at any time. So concerning that moment of realization that the Jews had then, it says that this is what we're going to have when Mashiach comes. It says, "Biyom ha'huya Hashem echad u'shmo echad," on that day, the day Mashiach comes, the way we know Hashem, meaning through all things, through the miracles and through the revelations and through nature, which is all still very limited, that'll be one with His existence. We'll see the life force. We'll see what's behind it all, which is hard to even imagine from where we are now. But that's where we were the day of Matan Torah. So this is what's meant when it says the mountain was like over our heads, and Hashem said, either accept the Torah or it'll descend on you and bury you, you'll die. This is where you'll be buried. Meant Hashem showed us His awesomeness. We felt the weight of Hashem's like unbelievable awesomeness over our heads, over our consciousness. You can't say no to Hashem when you have a realization of His presence. You can only say no to Hashem when you're locked up into your own smallness. That's where we were. So because of this, going back to what we said at the beginning, we had fear, and that fear was silenced by realization of Hashem's love. Okay, now what does that have, what does any of this have to do with us and our preparations for Shavuos? Here you are, looking in, you know, four different magazines at cheesecake recipes. You could say, this is all very exalted stuff, but I know how it's going to go. I know how it's going to go. They'll come home from shul at night, and there's kiddush and serving, and then the men will go to shul and learn, and maybe I'll go to a shir, or maybe not, or maybe I'll read, and maybe not. And maybe even I'll go to one of the many learning programs for women and learn some, or not. But where's this gigantic realization of Hashem's awesomeness? Are the seven heavens going to open up for me in the morning? Like, let's be real. That's what I could feel you thinking. So what I'm saying is that we have to try to go back to those moments, and it's possible. Why am I saying it's possible? There are six things that we're told we have to remember all of the time. You're familiar with them. We have to remember the Exodus. We have to remember standing before Mount Sinai. We have to remember what happened to Miriam. We have to remember the sin of the golden calf. We have to remember to do battle against Amalek. We have to remember things that are enclosed in us. So among the word zachar, Rav Hirsch points out, is related to the word sagar, which means to close in. All of these six things that we have to remember all of the time, we can only remember them because consciousness of them exists within us. Let me explain what I mean. I don't speak Italian. So if somebody were to say, how do you say dinner set in Italian? I can't say I don't remember. I would have to say I don't know. The problem isn't memory. I could only say I don't remember if I once knew it, if it's still in there somehow. So when it says, remember how you stood before Hashem at Mount Horeb, remember it. That means that the memory really is there. It's just a matter of what you have to do to gain access to it. So what could you possibly do? So as Rav Tzvi Meir says, everything always hinges on preparation. So even like at an actual wedding, you know, the months of preparation, the hall, the photographer, the caterer, all of this forces everybody who's participant to realize that this is like the most significant step in their lives. So let's talk about what we could do to be ready for Shavuos. So the first thing is that we have to be ready to go beyond the outside, which is exactly what happened to us through these miracles. Hashem showed himself as being the inner reality that gives life to everything. The Torah tells us how to enact it, how to live with it. So if you could, in the 3 days, the days of Hagbalah, if you could try for an especially serious effort towards Kedusha, towards being conscious of Hashem's presence when you say brachas, when you get dressed, when you do whatever you do. Okay, if you could have that higher consciousness, then you're towards being ready. You're moving in that direction. If you could say, as you're preparing and shopping and doing, that you're doing with this, all of this, with the desire to bring the simcha of Matan Torah into your physical life, then what you're doing is taking chayus, the vitality of Hashem, that's there anyway, and you're opening yourself to being aware of it. So I want you to carefully hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying be less involved with material things, quite the opposite. I'm saying be completely involved with material things, but don't separate them from their source. So The very word Shavuos means both oaths and weeks. So the reason why it means oaths has to do with the oaths that we took, which is the second stage of preparation. The first stage is readiness and drawing in Kedusha. The second is the oath. What's the oath? So, as you know, the oath was Nasa v'Nishma. We're going to do it, we're going to hear it. We're going to first do it and then hear it. Now that seems antithetical to what I said before, have higher consciousness and then do. The statement, I'll do it and then I'll understand it, was after they reached the level of higher consciousness and realizing Hashem above them. So what's the I'll do it first? I'll do the mitzvah first and then I'll understand the mitzvah. Meaning, I'll trust Hashem that if He says the way to reveal Him is by doing whatever, then that's what I'm going to do. That's what the actual mitzvot are. So treasuring the mitzvot without necessarily understanding the mitzvot is a very high level. Why? So the reason why is that if you do a mitzvah because you understand it, then you're limiting the relationship you have to the mitzvah to yourself and to your understanding. So for instance, if you have somebody who dresses modestly because it gives them some refinement and polish and dignity, ultimately they're serving themselves. Now even though all of those things are true, if the person's basic motivation is, you know what? Hashem, I'll look however you want me to look, and I'll speak however you want me to speak, and wherever you want me to be, I'm there. It's a completely different and much higher level, a super rational level of relationship. Now let's move into the third statement. Okay, so again, we have the inner preparation, then we have Nasa v'Nishma. Nishma's part of that. Unfortunately, there are people who, because Nasa comes before Nishma, see Nishma as almost a threat. You don't have to know so much, you don't have to think so much. You do. And I want to tell you why. Chachma is compared to the eye. You see what you see. Bina to the ear. When you listen, there's focus. That's why when you see, like if you're looking at me now, you see me, you see the bookcase, you see a lot of things. Hopefully, if you were listening, you wouldn't say you hear me and you hear the subtle electrical buzz of the wiring in the apartment that we're recording from. Okay, so the focus, nishma, what is the focus? So there's a word that we use very frequently, sometimes without that much depth of understanding. That word is L'shem Shamayim. What does that mean? It's for the sake of heaven. How could you do something for the sake of Hashem when He needs nothing? So there's another way to look at the concept of L'shem Shamayim. It's saying with Hashem, with His name as part of the picture. So it means if you're baking and cooking, you're with Hashem. If you're interacting with other people, you're with Hashem. And you want your action to lead you to a closer relationship. That's L'shem Shamayim. You're here with me and I'm moving towards you. Okay, so there's Nasa v'Nishma. So we're told that Hashem showed the Torah to all of the nations of the world. They all asked a question. The question is, what does it say? Now, that's not a stupid question. I mean, I'm sure, like me, you also know people who signed on the dotted line because they didn't want to be bothered looking at the fine print and found that they signed on something they never would have signed on had they been more aware and more responsible. It's a virtue to not ask, what does it say? It's a hard thing to say. So notice, after they said, what does it say, Hashem then told each nation the part of the Torah that they can't accept, meaning that they chose themselves out of being able to say yes to. The Edomites can't say yes to the Torah because it says don't murder. And that's their look at Western culture. It's their literature. It's their art. It's everything. They can't say no. It's like saying I don't exist. The same would hold true for the culture of Yishmael when it comes to stealing. Stealing is their idea of being clever, of raiding, of getting, of exploiting, of being like the knight in shining armor charging into the enemy camp. They would have no identity without it. The same holds true with Gilui Arayot and the descendants of Lot. So what am I telling you with all of this? Hashem is saying, notice that you can't say yes. Even if they wanted to say yes, they couldn't say yes honestly. They didn't have the capacity for it. When we said yes, it was because everything within us said Hashem, who created the world with the Torah as its blueprints, also created Yisrael as the people who could bring it into the world. So that means this yichud that we've been talking about until now, between Hashem and his world, via the Torah, something only Jews could do. So a third level, even beyond Nasa V'Nishma, is saying, I believe I could do it. I believe I could do it. So we have all of these cliches that we use. Yeah, I'm not holding there. I don't know if I'll ever be holding there. We said we could do it. So it says in the Torah, Ki karov elecha davar me'od. This is very near for you. This machloket about what this is. Is this Torah? Is this tshuva? Is this knowing Hashem? But it's in you, as we said. It's in our memory. It's in us. We could just pull it out when we need it. This sort of kabbalat ol, this ability to do whatever it is Hashem wants of us. So another level would be seeing that this belongs to us, that it's our heritage, and that we're able to do it. So I want to talk about ability in this regard. We're able to do it. That there's a critical word that I realize has to be introduced if we're going to keep this discourse relevant and honest. We could all do it, but not in 1 minute, not now. So another part of Shavuos is really looking at what's holding you back from being what you want to be and doing what you want to do, and say, there's where my battleground will be. Okay. Now, what we read Megillat Rut on Shavuos, so this is also relevant. When you look at Rut's story, what you see is that she moved from one extreme to the other. She was a Moabite. They were known for promiscuity and for cruelty. She moved from one extreme to the other, to being a person who was known only for her kindness, only for her chastity and modesty. What's that about? So what that's about is something else, which is we have the power to do it. Even a non-Jew who converts has the power to do it. The power isn't from within us. It's from Hashem. He helps us. Okay, there's a famous story. Before the war, one of the great yeshivas in Europe was Chachmei Lublin, run by Rav Meir Shapiro. It was tough. It was, the goal there was to create people who could be major Jewish leaders in the future. In order to gain admittance, the young man had to be testable on, I've heard different amounts, either 300 or 500 pages of Gemara. It's a huge intellectual feat. So there was this bacher, younger than is usually admitted, and probably he should have given himself a little more time for preparation. Came to the yeshiva. He was tested. And by their standards of what knowing means, he didn't know it well enough. So they told him, this isn't for you. So now he has to go home. Now he had a ticket, that wasn't the problem. He had come by train and he had a ticket home if he wanted to go. If he needed to go, I don't know if he had a ticket or if he had money. But something held him back. Instead of getting on the very next train, he stayed a little bit and missed it. And the coming train would be, I don't know, 4 hours later, whatever. During these 4 hours, he stayed in the Beis Midrash. The head of the yeshiva saw him. He said, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "When one of the questions you asked me in Masechet this and this, page that, was whatever question it was. I'm hearing the guys who came out of the shiurim. I want to know what the answer is." So the Rosh Yeshiva's response was, "You mean you missed a train and you're waiting here for hours till the next one because you want to hear the answer?" And the guy said, "Actually, yes." And he accepted him to the yeshiva. So the fact that Hashem on his side knows we have the ability to do doesn't mean he won't accept us as we are, because again, he could leap over things. And also he sees our potential, and not our potential and not just our moment-to-moment reality. So another form of service on Shavuos is for us to believe in our potential, for us to believe in this, that that we won't always be defined by how much we earn and how much we spend and how well we cook and how thin we are after we eat it. We have to believe in ourselves. We have to believe that there's something high, that there's something holy, that there's something Hashem could see when he looks at us. Now, this is very hard because there's a lot of stuff that doesn't look so good that anyone could see when you look at us. So the concept is, again, that the other stuff is the barrier. And the barrier is real, but you could jump over it. What does that mean concretely? So envision this. Suppose there's somebody who was married for, let's say, 20 years. In the course of all of that time, her kashrus wasn't what it should be. It was kosher, but not really kosher. What does that mean? Things got mixed, so they got mixed. If you bought a product with no kashrus on it, so, you know, it's just once. There's a lot of yes and no in her kashrus. So let's say she's now moved to an area where everything that's completely kosher is very easily available. It makes her feel like a hypocrite. Like, why should, you know, I'll start eating this kind of stuff now? Just last year, I mean, as long as, you know, it could have been certified kosher by Ahmadinejad, and I would have eaten it. And I don't know if I were still living, you know, in Cheyenne, I don't know if I'd be strong enough. So isn't it hypocritical for me to, like, change my standard just because I changed my address? What would you tell that person? I would tell them every day is a day. Don't throw away today because yesterday wasn't perfect. So a final part of the self-change that we need is to be willing to continually start again. You know, tear out the old pages of the notebook and start a new one and believe that you could do it with Siyata Dishmaya. So these three things, believing in yourself, Nasa Venishma, with Kabbalah's all, and seeing Hashem's presence is there, are the ways that we prepare for Sukkot. And this has to filter down to who we are when we cook, and who we are when we clean, and who we are when we clothing shop, and who we are when we're with the kids. And every single one of us could do it. So my wish to you is, of course, that this Sukkot be, this Shavuos be a time when everything that you wanted to see in Shavuos is realized. Where you really got, and in a serious way, got to realize your own goodness and your own connection to Hashem. And what if you say, the truth is, I'm not that good and I'm not that connected? There are people who aren't that good and there are people who aren't that connected. It's one thing for Hashem to jump over the impediments. It's another thing for him to look for what's not there, what never developed. So, a true story of something interesting that happened in Porat Yosef. A young man came to enroll into the yeshiva. He was totally not from, I'm not saying he came from a modern background. I'm not saying that he came from an inferior yeshiva. The guy wasn't from Why he wanted to learn in yeshiva, don't know. Was he saying he would turn everything around in 5 minutes? He was not. He said, I came to enroll in the yeshiva. The other people were there, thought he was crazy. They thought the guy was crazy. Why did they think that? Because the difference in level between where he could possibly be from his appearance and where the yeshiva was so vast that even if the Rav would accept him, what would he do there? What do you do in a yeshiva except learn? This guy clearly doesn't know how to learn. What will he do there? Now realize that today we've all lived through the tshuva movements and hopefully they're still going. But you know, if you go back a few decades, there were no balei tshuva. Ask people in their 60s how many balei tshuva they knew when they were growing up. There weren't balei tshuva then. Rav Tzadka took him in a flash. Now, he didn't take everybody who applied. There were people with far more going for them, more background, who he didn't take. So people didn't know what to make of it. So finally someone approached him. They said, how come you took him? You didn't take this other guy, but you took him? He's nothing. So he said, one thing I could see, Rav Tzadka said, this guy wants to turn himself inside out. This other guy is complacent. He is where he is, and that's where he wants to be. I didn't take him in because yeshiva is dynamic. But this guy, he wants to turn himself inside out. Why am I telling you this story? The reason I'm telling you this story is that Hashem sees us as we really are. And this is again where Yirat Shemayim comes into the picture. He doesn't fool himself. But if we're willing to turn ourselves inside out, then that's enough. That's enough for Kabbalah Satorah. Who knows if we'll really do it? It's another question. So the Jews in the desert also had to suffer the consequences of that question not being one that's easy to answer. Who says that, they say Na'aseh v'Nishma, who says that that resolution will last another hour, let alone another day? So the answer that they gave then was, our children will be our guarantee. Our children will be our guarantee. What does that mean? What it means is that they were evoking the fact that inherently we're different. And that the reason why Hashem chose to give the Jews the Torah isn't just because of the specific deeds of that generation, but because they're children of the Avos. They're people for whom Emunah is like breathing in and out. And if even if we failed, our children will come back. So indeed, that guarantee was acceptable, because it's the truth. So when we're looking at ourselves on Shavuos, don't hear again what I'm not saying. I'm not saying, don't worry about your madrig, your children will come back. No. What I'm saying is that we're part of something bigger than ourselves. So if we have our failings, we still have the merits of those who came before us and those who will come after us. As long as we're willing to change, as long as there's some desire to say, I want my Kabbalah's Torah to be real this time, then Hashem will look for what's real in potential, if not what's real in actuality. Hashem wants us, which is something that we often don't consider in this picture. He wants us, he wants our success. He wants us to feel the joy of closeness. He wants to make everything happen in a way in which, if we're ready, he's there. So this realization of his wanting us should inspire us to say, if he's ready, then indeed I am there. And it should take us to being imaginative and willing and even this much in process when Shavuos rolls around. So to conclude, when I was in the States just recently, and I heard something that I found very inspiring. I was visiting with a very dear mentor. She's somewhat older than I, and her husband is somewhat older than her. So we're talking about people in their early 20s. And she told me that her husband sort of started a new activity, something different, beyond his pretty significant schedule, which includes a lot of study, a lot of guidance to others. What does he do? He saw that in his community, there are quite a number of frustrated teachers, men who never developed into who they wanted to be, as Mekablei Torah and Mashpiei Torah. For various reasons, this person isn't so articulate, and that person had real parnassa issues, whatever it is. So here they are at a place in life where they're entrenched, where they have schedules in which learning isn't happening. Why? Because they wanted to teach. And that frustration created enough negativity in their self-image that not much is going on. In the same community, there are men who would want to learn. There are many shiurim available. In every shul, there are shiurim. But, you know, not every man's a shiur goer. When you go to a shiur, if you ask a question, you have 10 other guys who are listening to your question. Maybe it's not that sharp. When the Rav answers, if you don't get it the first time, it's not so comfortable to ask him to repeat it. So what my friend's husband did was to make shidduchim between the frustrated teachers and the frustrated learners. Now that's fine, that even I could have done. But he did something else. What he did is he realized that the frustrated teachers had self-esteem issues about their not having been contributive on their own terms to the Torah learning that takes place in their community. So for them to feel important, they would have to be paid. So he offered to pay them $25 an hour. He made up an association. You know, the Netzach HaTorah Association has decided to give you a grant of $25 an hour, which of course is very flattering. And he has 16 teachers at this point, and some of them teach several hours. So what does he do? He goes out at night and knocks on people's doors, and he raises the money to pay his teachers. So if in a given week he raises extra money, he gives them a bonus. So my friend, his wife, said, save it for next week. What if next week, you know, you don't have enough? He said, the same one who gave me Hatzlacha this week can give me Hatzlacha next week. Now there's a reason I'm telling you this story. The reason I'm telling you this true story is that a final part of Kabbalah's Torah is wanting to help people teach and wanting to help people learn. If you love Hashem and you realize the enormity of His gift, you want Him to be beloved by others. And the way that takes place is through learning and teaching. So the final way, in addition to everything we said, is find a way to see the Torah continues. Whether it's through supporting Torah or helping people organize Torah shiurim, or by learning, or by teaching. Part of your acceptance of Torah is accepting it as a treasure that you want to be shared. With that in mind, have a great Shavuos, an unforgettable Shavuos.